You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Rising profits don't necessarily reflect good strategic decision-making or the creation of long-term economic value. That only occurs when companies invest in positive net present value strategies where the return on capital exceeds its cost. I think every student of Finance 101 is taught that rule. And this business and investment theory has been ably demonstrated through this crisis that has exposed a pandemic of debt, and none more so than in the listed property sector. When faced with low growth here at home, the executives at a number of South African REITs looked towards Central and Eastern Europe and the Antipodes for growth and raised foreign currency debt to fuel their expansion. And they now lack sufficient equity to absorb the losses from COVID-19 related shutdowns, and debt to market value ratios have risen dramatically. The property boards and management teams and shareholders all seem to have forgotten that they're responsible for or own businesses, and that these businesses, as other businesses do, add value through an operating property strategy. There's been an excessive focus on income without regard to the sustainability thereof or the risks taken to generate it. And it's exactly what's got the sector into trouble. And if you look at what's gone wrong, the important thing is, what are the lessons in all of this? Growth Point was perhaps the most conservative when it came to exploring offshore opportunities in Europe, but even it hasn't been immune to the crisis of rising loan to values as property values come under pressure thanks to the COVID-induced economic slowdown and paying insufficient attention to the balance sheet. I'm joined now by CEO Norbert Sasser. Norbert, a decline in distributable income per share of 16.05%, with South African bad debt write-offs and provisions skyrocketing to 236.5 million from just under 19 million previously, and a rising loan-to-value from 37 to almost 44%, I think tells the story. It's been difficult.
Yeah, no, thanks for the introduction there, Michael. Absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt that in the time that I've been involved with the company, this is by far, in a way, the most challenging environment we've ever experienced. Not only through the global pandemic, I mean, clearly, you know, all the investments across the globe that we have have been impacted, some more so, some less so. But the largest impact by mile has obviously been on the South African operations. You know, the South African lockdown has really had a pretty devastating effect on the South African business. And I mean, you point out the decrease in our distributable income. I think the total amount was at 14.8% on a per share level at 16%. Now, if you put that into numbers, that's about a 952 million reduction in distributable income. And more than half, almost two-thirds of that, 600 odd million of that, is directly attributable to the South African operations, and in particular, COVID in the last 3 months of our financial year end. So that's April, May, and June. 520 million rand negative impact on our income statement, represented by, I think, discounts that we offered our customers of 277 million, bad debts and provisions for bad debts of 236 million, and some direct expenses of about 7. So by far, in a way, the chunk of the negative impact coming from the SA operations. And then, as you point out, gearing has gone up. Can't deny that. Combination of a number of factors. One pretty substantial factor to that is the write down of the South African property portfolio. We're over 7 billion write down, or 8.8% write down of the South African property portfolio, had a major impact on that number. And then, you know, higher sort of debt levels. You know, we did make the investment into Capital & Regional, and we used debt to fund that. We put some more money into Eastern Europe and funded that with debt. Our Africa fund was about a 600 million investment. And then CapEx. So the other big mover was our interest line. You know, our interest bill went up by just over 500 million. And those are the two big drivers of the, you know, of that negative impact.
Given all of that, and given the benefit of hindsight, what would you have done different?
At the end of the day, you know, we all knew that, not only ourselves but the industry as a whole. You know, we were looking for offshore exposure. We were playing, let's call it, the yield spread game. So buying sort of 6 and 7% dividend yields and funding it with 2 and 3% foreign currency denominated debt, if you want, whether that be actual foreign currency denominated loans or through cross-currency interest rate swaps. I do believe that what we were doing had a level of sustainability to it. We all knew that, you know, you couldn't keep leveraging the balance sheet ad infinitum and that there would be a limit to what you could do. You know, at the end of the day, what's happened, obviously, you know, globally has been completely and utterly unprecedented. I mean, nothing like this has ever happened before, hopefully nothing like it ever happens again. But, you know, in hindsight, you know, perhaps one might have, you know, been a bit more conservative on using that leverage. I think you pointed out in your introduction that we were probably a bit more conservative than most, but even ourselves have been, you know, now seeing the impact of, you know, of those actions, and clearly exacerbated by a very material write-down of the South African property portfolio.
And down almost 50% as a sector year to date. I understand that the sector is negotiating with the regulator to get dispensation from your distribution responsibility to help you restore your balance sheets. Some have taken exception to this. Pitfall Yun wrote a very heated thread on Twitter recently, saying that on the one hand, the sector has effectively negotiated the special tax status and has used that to benefit managers and shareholders on the upside, but now doesn't want to take it on the downside effectively. When you look at what happened there, obviously a very difficult situation. What have you heard back from SARS and Treasury so far? And when it comes to rebuilding the balance sheet, I suppose the important question is why, given the growing weakness of balance sheets across the sector, and why are you, as Growthpoint in particular, not planning to raise additional equity, especially since it would give you the opportunity now to acquire distressed assets in the country?
Yeah, Michael, so look, I think clearly, you know, balance sheets, as you point out, are under pressure, and I think one of the, you know, maybe just to answer your question first on the REIT issue, I'm not that close to the discussions and negotiations that are happening with the JSE and the National Treasury. I understand that the ask from the industry is, you know, maybe twofold. In the first instance, to have a reprieve on the REIT status, on the payout ratio, so if you pay out a bit less than 75%, then you know, you shouldn't lose your REIT status. And on the other hand, there's a request for a bit of a tax dispensation, because the way the tax works with the REIT is pretty much whatever you don't pay out, you would end up paying tax on. And given the need, and the need is certainly greater amongst you know, some of the other listed counters, perhaps than ourselves, to withhold dividend payment and retain liquidity, you know, that's sort of a bit of pull to swallow on one hand, you know, to pay no dividend but to end up paying tax. But the feedback I understand is that the JSE have been a bit more accommodating in their approach. They're sort of indicating that there can't be one answer for the industry, and every company needs to approach on its merits, and they'll evaluate it on its merits. So, we anticipate that there might be a little bit more clarity in the next couple of weeks towards the end of September, and hence, you know, our decision to defer the final dividend declaration. Who knows what may come out of, you know, out of those engagements? There might be something there that we could benefit from. I think, you know, Michael, the second part of your question is, you know, what I guess, you know, what are companies doing in terms of shoring up the balance sheet? I think there are probably a number of options and alternatives. The first one is, you know, obviously, you know, looking at reducing the payout ratio on the dividend. Second one is sort of domestic asset sales. Third one could be, you know, asset sales offshore, depending what one has offshore that's saleable. That doesn't help much in terms of the, let's call it the strategy to have greater offshore exposure, but these are uncertain times and unique times, and perhaps one needs to put, you know, the offshore aspirations on hold for a while. And then equity, as you point out, you know, equity in the form of either a DRIP. We've obviously been big users of the distribution reinvestment plan in the past. That's still an option. And then lastly, I guess, you know, going to shareholders for equity in whatever form. You know, it sounds tempting to go out and raise equity and then mop up, you know, good opportunities. But the reality is where the share prices are trading, you started off by saying 50% discount or down for the year. Most companies are trading, we're probably not far off that, a 50% discount to underlying net asset value per share. It's obviously financially, you know, quite distressing and you know, very negative on the financial metrics on your earnings per share, dividend per share, NAV per share basis, or you know, to go and raise equity at these levels. To bring it back to more specific, you know, to growth, when I guess we make the point in our announcement that the board is currently evaluating all options. So everything I've mentioned there before is being considered by the board, and in the next certainly before the end of December, we will have taken action on a number of initiatives to address liquidity and balance sheet strength.
To that point, Norbert, I'm chatting to a leading property investor this morning, and they said effectively what you've just said in terms of options. You could do nothing and just hope that you get lucky and things turn around. You can sell assets to reduce debt or raise equity and reduce debt. And in their opinion, the right course of action is for shareholders to actually recognize that the businesses they own have too much leverage and start reducing that leverage. And the preferred way of doing that is to offer only scrip dividends. There are some technical JSE rules that prevent this, though. Would you be in favor of that kind of option? I know you said all options are on the table, but that seems to be a prudent way of going about things in this environment.
Absolutely. I think it's probably the best possible answer for the companies themselves. It might not be the best possible answer for shareholders. And you've got to appreciate, Michael, you know, there, as many shareholders as we have, you have as many opinions on whether one should pay a dividend or not. We've received letters suggesting we should not pay any dividend at all, irrespective of the tax consequences. We've received approaches from individual shareholders who've said they want us to put resolutions forward at the AGM, which forces us to continue to pay out 100%, and anything in between. But if you look at the mechanically and probably practically, the easiest and best solution for the company is if there were to be some regulatory allowance or approval which allows REITs to pay out 100% shares if you want as a dividend, or to in the REIT specific world, to pay the dividend, but to almost then force investors to reinvest that. That would be the best and most simple, you know, solution and most cost-effective, timely, and you know, solution for the companies, no doubt about that.
From your perspective, if you look at your competitive advantage at the moment, what is that? And can you extract more value from your assets than if those assets were in the hands of a competitive firm?
You know, I think our competitive advantage is, in the first instance, I would say that, you know, the absolute size of the business and the very wide diversification that we have across all three sectors. You know, on the one hand, I think it is a positive differentiator and competitive advantage, in as much as we're not only exposed to the retail sector, for example, which has been the hardest hit. We've got exposure to all of them. But then again, we are a barometer for the South African economy as a whole. So we have retail, office, industrial, and waterfront with its tourism. So, you know, we are a pretty good barometer for the South African economy, and unfortunately the South African economy is in dire straits. But I do think still that the large size of our portfolio, the diversified nature of the portfolio, is a competitive strength. I think our internal development expertise and development team and what that brings to the business is a differentiator. And then if you look at the international side of our business, you know, it's fair to say, Michael, that the two of our international investments, in particular Growthpoint Australia and also Global Worth, which has got the exposure to Romania and Poland, those entities, given that they don't have any retail exposure, have actually performed really well operationally. I mean, they've actually performed exceptionally well operationally. They might have pulled back on the dividend that they've paid us because everybody at the moment is sort of, you know, holding back a little bit of cash and managing balance sheet and liquidity. But as far as those businesses go, they performed extremely well under very difficult circumstances, and they've got phenomenal customer bases. The one that is more problematic, I guess, is Capital & Regional in the UK, our most recent acquisition, where it is 100% exposed to the retail sector in the UK. So, you know, obviously it was much more negatively impacted. But compared again to some of our peers and trying to find differentiators or competitive advantage, our offshore investment, certainly Globalworth and Growthpoint Australia, continue to pay dividends, and albeit that they were slightly less, you know, remain very well capitalized and liquid, and were able to pay dividends, whereas many of our competitors' offshore investments weren't able to and didn't pay dividends.
If you look at the additional revenue streams that you've introduced into the business over the last while, the fund management business and others, how are those adding value to Growthpoint right now?
Yeah, look, they're still pretty small in the overall scheme of things. There's no doubt, though, that as a board, we believe in the long-term future of what I would call the capital-light strategy, so the fund management business, where we leverage our expertise. You know, to your earlier point, you know, what's the competitive advantage? We've got 630 odd seasoned property professionals across our business. We know how to do anything from property asset management, property, you know, facilities management, development management. Not too many people understand, or investors understand, that these property companies such as Growthpoint are fully fledged operating companies. We don't just sit at a desk and make an investment decision. You know, we physically have to operate these entities. And if I think what our people went through in the last sort of 3 to 4 or 5 months now under lockdown, and how they've had to go the extra mile to ensure people's safety at our shopping centres, to ensure people have access to our buildings in a safe manner, you know, office tenants, et cetera, et cetera. It is that platform that we have, to my mind, is extremely valuable. And in the capital light strategy, that is what we seek to leverage. You know, so we don't have to invest all of the capital into these assets, into these direct properties. We can find co-investors, and we can then provide these services and leverage the platform. And so from that perspective, you know, we've now got, between the two funds that we have up and running, the Growthpoint Investec Africa Property Fund and our healthcare fund, we've got about 10 billion rand worth of assets under management. We're starting to earn some pretty good fees out of those businesses. And we do think that in itself is a competitive advantage, and an area of the business that we think has got significant growth opportunities. You know, you spoke earlier about raising equity to potentially go out and buy other assets. We would sooner just invest less equity ourselves, find partners and co-investment, you know, partners, and leverage our platform. In that way, grow the business. You know, because right now, one is tempted to reduce the business, to just sell assets. And but I do think the one growth area, significant growth area in the business, is in fact the fund management business.
And I think lastly, Norbert, the other big issue for landlords in general in South Africa is the astronomic rise in utilities over the last decade at multiples of CPI. When is the industry going to take a stand against what can be termed nothing short of extortion, if you look at the service levels that one receives in exchange for these astronomical rates and utilities?
Yeah, Michael, it's been a problem for many years. We've been commenting on it ourselves. Not only are you faced with these exorbitant increases, but the service delivery is reducing every day. And in many instances, we're having to replicate the service ourselves at our own cost. So I do think we've probably gotten to a point where it's gone beyond the point of us just standing back and not doing anything about it. So my colleague and the CEO of our South African business, Estienne de Klerk, has been very vocal on this recently through the industry bodies, both the REIT Association and the South African Property Owners Association. We certainly believe that the time has come now to take more active steps and engage more actively with the authorities and the different, let's say, the minister, you know, on these sorts of issues, because it's clearly not sustainable at all. And notwithstanding us paying these fees, these exorbitant rates and taxes, many, many municipalities today across the country and even some of our biggest metros are effectively bust or in liquidation or in administration.
That is one of the biggest problems in the country today, faced with ever-expanding costs to do business, costs to live. We are getting diminishing returns in the form of capacity and services that are withering away before our very eyes. That was Growthpoint CEO Norbert Sasser reporting back on what is a very difficult time for the listed property company and the listed property sector. Lots of questions being asked and lots of solutions being bandied about by investors and shareholders and managers alike. Norbert, thanks so much for your time.